For members only. Golf Smarter number 232, recorded on May 25, 2010.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
The Hacker's Guide. Real ratings by real people.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Well, I don't know if it's completely worked for me, but, you know, I'll do my best. And some days it doesn't, some days it doesn't. Welcome and thanks for checking in for our newest episode of the Golf Smarter Podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Golf Ahoy at GolfAhoyWest.com. Now's the perfect time to plan your golf travel for the summer and fall of 2010. And Golf Ahoy is your one stop to help you book your travel, accommodations, and rounds of golf. And for me, personally, I like having all-inclusive options, so I know what my costs are going into an adventure, whether it's golf or not. That's why I'm letting you know about Golf Ahoy and my friend Frank Rogers. If you're interested in a golf trip to the UK this fall, make sure you take advantage of the amazing package that GolfAhoyWest.com has to offer for the 2010 Ryder Cup at Celtic Manor in Wales. Make your plans now and book it all through GolfAhoyWest.com. This week's guest is a writer, entrepreneur, podcaster, and most importantly, a fellow hacker. Bruce Stash was the host of Golf Gear News Podcast, and he and some golf buddies got fed up with not having enough information about a golf course that was relevant to the majority of golfers. So they created the Hacker's Guide. Now, the first one is for Minnesota and Western Wisconsin, but the online version is wide open to everybody, and he wants your help. So let's see what he has to say. It's a lot of fun. I hope you enjoy it. Welcome to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Bruce.
Thank you very much, Fred. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Well, it's great to have another podcaster on the show. I don't generally do that.
We're kind of an odd breed, I think. And you've been doing this longer than I have. I think I started doing it in like 2004, 2005, and we were kind of, what we would say, lone wolves in our area back then.
Yeah. Well, I actually started doing it in 1975, but it wasn't called podcasting then. So to me, it's just...
It was called radio?
It was called radio, exactly. it's just a change of distribution as far as I'm concerned. I'm doing the same thing I've always done. It's just changing the distribution. I like this one better.
Well, you know what's cool? You have more control over it. You don't have to invest $1 million in a studio, and you basically can kind of do what you want to do.
Right, right. And your audience is, you know, the whole niche content of being able to just talk about golf and just talk to golfers is awesome, and having a global audience is phenomenal and outrageous.
Well, and it's what the other thing I always like is, they find you.
Right.
I mean, radio structurally is just, okay, we're going to just blast it out to everybody. And, okay, if you tune in, you might be able to find us. But, you know, if it's a sports talk kind of situation, well, I'm a baseball fan or I'm a football fan, I don't really care about golf. And here you've got a highly, highly focused market. They're listening. They're tuning in because they're interested in your topic. And then they give you feedback, which is also cool.
Which is very cool. Yeah, it's the push versus pull. Right? People have to pull in a podcast where radio is pushed out there, and if somebody hears it, hey, that's great. You know, and they charge advertisers going, yeah, you might get someone who will hear it at the exact moment you're talking about your product. But with a podcast, when we wish that we can get more advertisers interested, but with a podcast, when somebody's listening, they listen. They pay it. They want this content.
Yeah, well, and I think we talked earlier once about this, that they just sometimes don't seem to get advertisers now, don't seem to get the idea of a highly targeted market. They think that's what we want, but then they don't. They want to use the same metrics that they use in radio or TV, you know, cost per thousand. And it's just, yeah, it's frustrating because I know I've gone out and asked folks if they want to advertise. If I got a highly targeted market, they're all golfers. They're not going to tune in if they're not. And they look at you with glassy eye going, but...
What are your numbers?
How many millions of people are listening to to listening to your show.
Well, honestly, that's the problem that I've had with manufacturers, because when you try to go to the big boys, the major players in golf, they're going to send it over to their agency, and the agency is going to say the same thing. What are your numbers? What's the metrics? You know, it's like, it's a different ballgame here. We're not, our ROI in podcasting is different. We're not talking about return on investment. We're talking about return on influence.
Well, and the other part of it is you can tune in whenever you want to. I mean, it's not like, okay, we had a million people listen to it at this one moment.
Right.
It's, you might have had a million people, but they listened to it over a 45-day period.
Exactly. And they heard it from the beginning to the end. And I'm just curious, did your podcast, you had a million listeners, huh?
No, yes, I did. Oh, my gosh, I made so much money doing this. It was just fabulous.
Well, let's what was your podcast, or what is your, are you, you're not doing it anymore, are you?
It's on hiatus.
Oh, I see. It's a hiatus. It's taking a nap.
Yes, it is, exactly. It was Golf Gear News, and really the primary focus was equipment, because we also at the time ran a golf equipment e-commerce website. So I wanted to reach out and talk to the, what I call the non-branded wholesalers, the how do you say, secondary brands that you hear about barely, but they're not Callaway, they're not Ping. I wanted to talk to golf retailers. And then I talked to, for instance, the Special Olympics had a program, a golf program, which there is very active.
Yeah, it's great.
And that's one of the popular sports. And so I talked with the folks there, and then I talked with the Audubon International, because they had a, what do they call it, a sanctuary program, where they're trying to get golf courses to participate. And some do, but because they don't have any budget, it's really, really hard to change attitudes. You know, especially the supervisors, like, okay, you can't fertilize your course to death. You can't use water like you use it now. You can't mow everything in sight. And so they always have some challenges trying to convince older supervisors of golf courses to say, you know, you can turn this into an Audubon International sanctuary. Hmm. So that was kind of my tack, is I didn't want to talk to, like you, I didn't want to talk to golf pros. I didn't want to talk to Callaway would have been fine, but that you can get their answers, you know, in Golf Week and Golf Digest. So I wasn't.
Well, yeah, and then they just give you their PR people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's kind of like you. I want, my focus was a little different, but I wanted to talk about a different part of the industry, which you don't know. Well, they didn't have a budget to do it, you know, and so they didn't get the kind of ability to have the voice. There's a lot of very interesting, innovative people out there, and they got some great product, and nobody knows about it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely a market for a golf gear podcast. There was, when I was doing that show a while back with that retailer, and we were getting, different manufacturers to come on, people, you know, when that ended, people were like, I want more equipment stuff. It's like, they really get into it. Love that
stuff.
Yeah,
well, that's...
You can't lie to me, dude. You are doing Golf Gear News because you wanted to get free gear so you can try it out.
You know, I didn't, actually. The only thing I ever got, to be honest with you, because I never solicited free crap. No, I didn't. Is, what was it, Nicholas Golf?
Yeah.
Sent me a specialty club, which is fabulous, by the way. I love that. But that was the only product I ever asked them to send me.
Wow.
Send me some stupid sunglasses and send me... Oh, okay, I lied. Adidas once sent me some sunglasses. But aside from those two products, nothing. I didn't never ask for anything else, because they're always like, hey, you want to get this great golf towel? Hey, you want to get... It's like, you know, what am I going to do with 20 golf towels?
Right.
I mean, I don't golf enough that I'm going to get 20 golf towels dirty. So it's like... And I didn't want to waste their money for sending me it in the first place.
Oh, are you kidding? I have 7 putters.
Well,
and I've lost
one. Clearly you have no integrity. There we
None
go.
None whatsoever. Oh, wait a minute. Whoa. I've never claimed to be, you know, unbiased or journalistically sound or
neutral,
neutral or ethical. I've never claimed that. I want to make you a star. When I talk to people, it's like, I'm not here to expose you. I'm here to get your information and put it out there and let everyone else decide for themselves. I just want to ask people questions. I'm looking for you know, people to give me lessons and tips and great stories. And mm-hmm. I'm not writing stories about anybody. Maybe that's what I'm screwing up here. I don't know.
Well, yeah, and I think one of the things, and that's kind of where I like, you know, if you've got a media bent, which is in a background like you have, it's kind of cool to be the voice of the people, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what would the people, in quotes, be interested in? And to me, okay, you can find the standard stuff and the standard interviewee subjects or interview subjects anywhere. It's like, what kind of things do they really want to talk about? Because, you know, and you know, you don't have a biased agenda. I mean, we can't say anything bad about the equipment because they're our major sponsor.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of stuff.
Right.
And that's what kind of allowed, that's the other thing about podcasting. It's simple. You can just, you know, fire up a podcast and get it distributed and you get grief for it, but you don't have to work through a system and they don't edit your work, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's talk about me. Huh?
Okay. Enough about me. Let's talk about me.
Me, exactly.
Okay, let's change gears here and go, hey, Bruce, I'd love to share with everybody this great book that you have. This is really a phenomenal book. I mean, The Hacker's Guide.
You mean The Hacker's Guide?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, The Hacker's Guide for Minnesota and Western Wisconsin.
Well, I'm sure your listeners want to hear about this.
I think that we should talk about it. Actually, it's a really neat idea. It's and just right there on the cover, real ratings by real people. Explain to me what this is all about.
Well, the motivation for this, for Hacker's Guide, was about three seasons ago. And this is related to the fact that we blog and we podcast. So when we were blogging, a colleague and I were looking for content. And basically, we said, let's go and call courses up, see if it'll let us rate them, and tell everybody about it. And so we did that technically 4 years ago. And we called seven courses that we didn't know anything about. And they all said, sure, why don't you come out, and we'd love to have you rate our course, because no one ever does. So that was kind of the seed for what we're doing. So we went and did that. Those seven courses. Then we did the Twin Cities metropolitan area up here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, which represented 87 public 18 courses. And then this last year, in 2009, and published this year, we did 283 golf courses, which is every 18-hole public in Minnesota and 35 in western Wisconsin. So that's kind of our model, is to keep rolling it out. This year we're working on the five-state upper Midwest, which is Wisconsin, North and South Dakota, Iowa, and Minnesota, which will be 680 courses. And that's kind of the model. We go to every course. We ask them ahead of time if we can come and rate them, so it's not like Secret Chopper. We send out a team of raters to the course. They rate a course on 60 different factors, anything from hospitality to value to the facility to the clubhouse to the customer service, to the quality of the food. I mean, just 60 different factors. We weight every factor. They fall into five categories. We give a score in all five of those categories, and then we give them an overall score. So that every course gets six numbers, and they're all rated against each other. So if we did the San Francisco, for instance, they run through the same rating system. And kind of in parallel to that, you know, Golf Digest did the best places to play Bible that they did every 2 years. Well, I found out last year that they actually don't do that anymore. They don't publish a book. So we're really the only rating system that does this, that goes to the effort and the length that we do to rate every course. Oh, and then I forgot one thing. Every course gets a 400-word write-up. So in addition to getting scored, which is kind of what Golf Digest did, they also get a write-up from the perspective of the hacker. So we're looking at it, and the raters that go up are the people that shoot, on average, around 90, which are hackers, and hackers represent 78% of the market from our statistics. And we try to give as accurate assessment from a typical, what I like to call a lightly skilled golfer, give them that perspective so that when they're going to play a course, they know the things to look out for. That, you know, it is worth the value. It is not as hard as everybody claims, or it is too hard for them. They should play from the black tees. They should play from the white tees. The food's good, whatever, whatever. So what Hacker's Guide really tries to do is give the perspective of the average hacker. And the average hacker, you know, shoots 90. That's probably you and I. I don't know how well you play, but I'm assuming you kind of fall into that category. And our slogan, which is Real Ratings by Real People, is true. We get regular, everyday hackers. And when we actually ask them to sign up to become a rater, we ask them what their handicap is. And we try not, you know, if someone is a 2 handicap, we're much less inclined to have that person rate, simply because what a 2 handicapper does and how they play a course is nothing close to how I play a course.
Yeah.
I mean, that's night and day. So the hope is that regular people are rating regular courses, and when you see a review from us, you go, hey, this course fits my game. This is the kind of place I want to go, and I want more than just how hard or how easy a course is. I want the entire golf experience, because I'm going to spend $50 or $75 for 4 or 5 hours. So I want to get a good value for what I'm paying for.
I'm curious if we can actually backstep a little bit, because from my perspective, when people look at golf courses, they'll just check out the scorecard. They'll say, "Oh, this course is 7,000 yards." And that's how they determine what they're going to do on that golf course. And the rating and slope, which is listed for every golf course, is rarely utilized. And I think it's people don't know that exists, or what the hell it even means. Can you describe what rating and slope means?
Well, par and slope came later than when par was invented. Is based on what they say is kind of what a bogey golfer, how they would play a course. And so it's based on the various factors of difficulty of the course itself. And so when you play a 7,000-yard course or you play a slope course of 142, that's supposed to tell you that's a more difficult course than a course that is 119. And our point on what the USGA system is, which is par and slope, is that that only rates one issue or one factor of a golf experience. It rates simply the difficulty of a course of what a typical bogey golfer would experience.
And you're saying that the rating is what a scratch golfer would shoot on that course?
No, actually, I believe it's a bogey golfer.
Is the rating or the slope? Those are two different numbers. Rating and slope are two different numbers on a scorecard.
No, the rating or par is what a scratch golfer would shoot, or that's what you're supposed to be shooting.
Okay.
Whereas slope is more based on what a bogey golfer would play, based on, obviously, which tees you're at. So if you're at the white, obviously the slope's going to be lower than if you're at the blacks.
Yeah. And then par is just par. It's just that really mean, rude, it's just pressure. Par is just pressure. It's not fair.
Mm-hmm. Well, our point with the USGA, which is really the only standardized rating system, is that they only look at one issue or one factor of golf, which is how hard a course is. And we want to look at the other aspects of the entire experience. And so we think, you know, someone may argue with that, but we think that we have the most complete assessment of a golf course than anybody out there, because we look at 60 factors. We don't look at just difficulty.
So your 6 factors, again, are?
60 factors.
Wow.
Five categories.
Okay, so the categories we have, and they rank for different levels of importance.
Yeah, we have 5 categories, and there's about a dozen questions that make up each category. And it's, the categories are hospitality, playability, usability, facility, and value. And so from the way we weight things, playability is the most important. Hospitality, you know, staff friendliness, how frequently does the cart person come by, customer service, check-in, check-out, that sort of stuff. hospitality is second. We do usability. We do facility, which is what I consider is the clubhouse, the parking lot, the driving range, and value. So we don't, people will ask, well, how come this $25 course is rated, not rated highly versus this $100 course is rated highly? Because value is only 10% of our total score. So because it's an expensive course, that doesn't necessarily mean you get hammered for it, because value is one-tenth of the overall factors that we look at. We try to look at the entire experience, and so you got to kind of weigh all those factors in different ways.
It's very interesting. And how much time did you spend to come up with those five categories? I mean, you guys must have pounded this out for a while before you realized what it is that you were going to create.
Yeah, we did. We probably spent a season kind of tweaking it.
Mm-hmm.
Based on how the scoring comes out, based on, you know, the more courses that we went to see, and then the resulting score that they got helped kind of tighten it up. And then also this season, we actually added 20 additional factors so that we could kind of broaden out stuff. Because the thing is, if they don't have something in particular, like, for instance, some courses may not have a driving range, we think that's important,
mm-hmm.
but that shouldn't kill them simply because they don't have a driving range.
Yeah, I can understand that. I have a course locally that I really like to play that doesn't have a place to warm up, but it's still a good round of golf. But you know, you're battling because it's got a high slope, and also it's difficult, but you can't warm up. So that's kind of frustrating. So I understand that.
Yeah. You know, so that's why it's an experiential rating versus simply a difficulty rating.
Right, right. And how does one... well, we know how to become a hacker. We're already there.
Yeah, but, just play.
But how does one become a writer for the Hacker's Guide? And are you recruiting?
We are always recruiting. The best way, we have what's called Team Hacker. And Team Hacker represents, you know, the great unwashed of hackers out there. But we have, for the area that we're in now, we probably had 650 people sign up for this.
Really?
We take about 10% maybe of that group. So we're, oddly enough, we're kind of elitist when it comes to Team Hacker members, which is kind of contrary to the whole concept.
It really is kind of funny that you hackers elite.
Yeah. So you're in it. So Team Hacker is kind of a special group, but it's really... they have to understand what we're trying to achieve. And so they go through three or four steps before they even get out on the course. And they have to write themselves out of a paper bag. And they have to understand that we're trying to look at it through the glasses of a hacker, not out of somebody who's really good. And that's where sometimes somebody who's a 2 handicap, you know, and might have been a golf pro, that's very admirable. But they may not look at the things the same way. So that's Team Hacker, and the easiest way for anybody to sign up for it is at hackersguides.com. That's kind of our informational site. They can also visit hackerscentralonline.com, which is our community. That has all the reviews in it, that has a sign-up, that has track your golf scores, there's a lot of local news. And as we add courses, we add reviews to that. The reviews, when they get done and put on the website first, and then when we have a market completed, then we publish a book.
Awesome.
So if they want to get involved, we are moving into other markets. We're looking at licensing in markets. So if somebody wants to be a golf entrepreneur and says, you know, I'm from San Francisco and we've got hundreds of courses in our area and that's a market I want to open, we theoretically could start opening markets if we had the right core people to work with. And so we'll be signing up people in the markets as we expand them.
How much golf have you played in other parts of the country?
I haven't done very much, oddly enough. It's sort of the, my dad always would say, you know, the busman's holiday or the shoemaker's kids have no shoes kind of thing.
Right.
It's, you know, when you're in the golf business, you don't play any golf.
Right.
But so it's primarily in this market, you know, a little bit in Vegas when you're on vacation, a little up in the Michigan, Wisconsin areas. But I haven't been out to San Francisco to play golf. Been out to San Francisco. not to play golf.
Not to play golf. So are you a big fan of golf in Minnesota and western Wisconsin? Do you think the courses is it a destination for golfers?
There are certain parts. I mean, there are definitely some high-quality courses. The Brainerd Lakes area, which has got a lot of resort-level class courses. There's probably 25 or 30 courses up there, and they all score highly. There's in the Arrowhead region, which is kind of that point in the northeast corner, right around Lake Superior. There's a couple of really, really good courses, the Classic and the Quarry in a town, I believe it's Bowabic. And there's another one out there called the Wilderness. There's some really good quality core courses. There's some stuff in the Twin Cities, but, you know, if you're looking at a destination, you know, a resort destination, the Brainerd Lake seems to be the most popular area up here. And then Wisconsin Dells are very popular. And then obviously, which we will be rating as we move along this year, near Lake Michigan, you've got the Kohler courses. There's one that's vying for the 2017 U.S. Open, which is Erin Hills, which we'll be rating. So there's some really, really nice courses in eastern Wisconsin as well.
Fabulous. And you list every single course, and you break up Minnesota into six different sections, and then you list also the top 25 in each category. And so if anybody, you know, if you live in this area or if you vacation in this area or you know people who are in this area, this is a great gift. And a great resource to have.
$50 eat it.
Whoop, say that again. I'm sorry, you broke up?
Yeah, for $20, you can't beat it. It is a good gift.
Yeah.
Or for $24, you can go online, and as we add courses, we'll probably, by the end of this year, we'll have almost 700 courses on our website, all rated, all reviewed. So you will have the biggest grouping of course ratings, period, in my opinion.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Bruce, I wish you all the luck in the world with this, and it was a lot of fun to speak with you. Whenever you want to talk about gear and you still want to keep your show in hiatus, you're taking a nap, give me a call, and we'll talk about with gear what you get excited about. And you can say whatever you want about it.
Okay, nice.
Unless I get something terrific. Unless you send something for me to me for free, then I'll like, oh, I love this golf club.
Well, see, I sent you a book for free, so that's why you said, like, lots of really nice things, right?
I love this book.
It works with
you? I love this book. All right, Bruce, thanks, and best of luck. Again, it's hackersguides.com or hackerscentralonline.com, and you can check out what they're doing, and he's always looking for people to help out. If you want to do some writing or even start your own franchise of your state, he's more than welcome. You're more than welcome to speak to him about it. Bruce Stash, thanks so much, buddy.
Fred, thank you very much, and I admire your podcast. You are the king of golf podcasts.
Get that. Shut up.
You are. Really? No. I mean, I think I told you this before. I admire you from afar because you're steady. You're like, the thing about podcasts is they fall off really fast. You know, you do them for a while, and then you get bored. But yeah. You have been doing it steadily, clockwork, for how many years have you been doing this?
A while. I started in the end of 2005, so it's been a while now.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just cranking them out, isn't it?
Well, until I find something else to do, this is the best thing I got going, so.
Well, there you go. You could do your own franchise there, right, in Northern California. That's a really good market.
Well, you know, I wish I knew how to write. if you ever read my blog, you'll know.
Okay. Well, the thing is, you just need to find writers. You just do management, you know.
Okay.
Those who can't do, manage, you know. That's how that goes.
Oh. Now we're getting into business consulting, too.
Exactly. You tell other people what to do. You don't do it yourself. And yeah, if you did it yourself, you'd be rich.
Oh, man. This conversation, people are going, why is he the head of golf podcasting? It's like, where is he going with this? See, you have it all wrong.
Yeah. No, I just think, because that's the thing I've had as a fellow podcaster. That's always been the challenge, finding new content. just being methodical. Always, you know, if you're going to post a show every Monday, you post a show every Monday, you know.
That's
and the hardest thing in the world in podcasting, in my opinion, is to just be steady and to just do it. If you had a big organization like CBS or CNN, great. You'd have somebody doing a podcast every single day. But when it's just you and you know, you're the one that has to do the production and you're the one that has to find the guest and you're the one that has to, you know, be the host, oh my gosh, it can be a big bear sometimes to do it. And that's what I admire, because I personally am totally experienced with the idea of trying to constantly come out with a podcast. Not that people are going to be interested in. And you do, I think you do a great job with that.
Thank you very
much. So there, there's my plug for you.
Thank you. That's very kind. I appreciate it. Hey, since this is a members-only episode, I wanted to let you know that the new ClickGear Model 3.0 has finally been released. Now, if you're a walker but are not a fan of carrying your bag for 5 miles over 4+ hours, then you really should make the small investment for a push cart. Oh, I love my push cart. I love my ClickGear 2.0. Do you realize that it takes longer to play cart path golf than it does to walk? Actually, Frank Rogers of GolfAhoyWest.com, he and I were playing golf, and the course that he plays, they did a study recently and found out from walking, cart path golf, and cart golf, cart path golf is the longest. I was just, I'm not surprised. I hate cart path golf. I just give me my clubs. I'll go. I don't like to carry them, though. Anyway, but that is another great reason for you to pick up a ClickGear, besides that it folds down to next to nothing when you put it in your car. God, it's small, and it's so easy to put away. Now, in the past, I was able to advertise that we have a members-only special price, but I'm no longer allowed to do that. So let's just say, for Golf Smarter members, order either the ClickGear 2.0 at a new reduced lower price, or the brand new Model 3.0, for $199. And if you order it from golfsmarter.com, you'll receive a gift with your purchase. Right now I have a choice of gifts too. So just write to me if you want the details. But pick up your ClickGear Model 3.0 or get last year's 2.0. It still works great at golfsmarter.com. Now lately I've been asking you to send me reasons why you love golf. And I realized that I was missing the point. I was, you know, I like to paint the pretty pictures. Well, damn it, there are no pretty pictures in golf. Have you ever sat around the 19th hole talking about how much you love golf? Come on, no you haven't. Have you ever had a second conversation with another golfer and talked about why you love golf? Oh, sure, the first time you meet, you're more than happy to talk about your favorite courses, great moments, a hole-in-one, amazing shots. But really, the next time out and forevermore, we only talk about what makes us crazy about golf. So for this week's closing quote, we thank Tyrone Williams of Detroit, Michigan, for putting this all in perspective for me. Tyrone, thank you. Our closing quote all month is brought to you by a new book of golf poems by John Ducker called The Kiss That Caused My Slice. This is a book that would be a great Father's Day present, and is also available in our book section at the Golfers Mart at golfsmarter.com. Now, for his entry, Tyrone is going to receive a signed copy of the book. So why don't you send me a reason why you love golf, or hate golf, or it makes you crazy? And if we use it to close the show, you too will win a signed copy of the book. Recently written up in the Wall Street Journal, the book again is called The Kiss That Caused My Slice. And this is what Tyrone Williams wrote to me when I asked him why you love golf. He says, I hate golf. This game is impossible and I hate it. When I'm driving the ball well, I can't sink a putt. When I'm hitting my long irons well, I don't have distance control with my short irons. If I get the distance dialed in, I miss left or right. Every now and then I get everything to work well and I feel like, finally, I've got it. But on the next round, I have no idea what's going on. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. But I can't quit. Next week, Jeff Ritter of JeffRitterGolf.com joins us for the first of a twofer. If you have any comments, questions, suggestions, or reasons why you love or hate golf, just click on the Hey Fred button at GolfSmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.